We are now going to progress to some steps which are a bit more difficult.
Relax and enjoy yourself.
Ready, set, and begin.
I'm curious about this broadcast.
It is quite bad, but it is good for you.
On with the show!
You have got what appears to be a dynamite sound.
That's right.
I'm skinny little boy from Cleveland, Ohio. Come to chase your women and drink your beer.
Now.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the one and only
crazy
Frank.
Oh, yeah. Here we are, kids. Another Thursday, a snowy Thursday. Installment of Crazy Frank Live. Once a week, I crack the mic unfiltered, even more so than normal. Not really. It's the same unfiltered Crazy Frank. Which, incidentally, is why they call me Frank. People have written to me. They say, dear Crazy Frank, why is it that they call you crazy? You seem perfectly sane to me. What's the deal? Sincerely? You know, I'm not going to out the people who write me. First of all, your penmanship is fantastic. Second of all, look, I picked up the name because let me tell you this, a little tidbit in my life experience, and that is there is nothing more empowering than not giving a shit. And I mean that sincerely, not in a little way, but in a big monumental way. There is nothing quite empowering. It's just not caring. And it works across all facets of life, my friends, in the dating world. These guys who really, really try and try and try and try and try to succeed. Then you get a guy like me who just doesn't give a shit. And I've said this before, and in the sheer volume of women that I have known carnally, if I'm using that term properly, if you look at me, it doesn't make any sense. But it's because I don't give a shit. I just don't care. Whatever. And when it comes to deals, let's say you go in for a bit. Think about it. You go in for the big job interview, the job you really, really, really want. You know, you're dressing, you know, you're just nervous, you're whatever, you get so much riding on it. You think about the night before the big interview, you think, man, if I get this job, just think of the kind of money I'll make and what that'll mean for my life and the implications, the domino effect, you know, in your entire life. Just all the cool stuff that's going to happen. Everything's riding on that big interview. You know, so you go to the big interview. And do you ace it or do you blow it? I don't know. Or you could stroll in. There's a scene in the movie Office Space. If you've not ever seen the movie, I highly recommend it. It is one of the films on Crazy Frank's recommended films to watch. I just made that up. But if I had such a list, Office Space would be on it. And so they have, and it's as relevant back when the movie was made as it is today. You have these consultants that come in, and the consultants are designed to basically look around and let them know how they can tighten up the operation and trim the fat. So they bring all these people in and they ask them, what do you do here? And these people are really nervous when they go in, and they're like, ah, because they know these two guys, they're known as the Bobs, could, with a stroke of a pen, their career is over. So all these people are nervous and freaking out, and they end up doing a lot of clear cutting. Then they bring in this guy who had this just like crazy life-altering event happen, and he just has decided he doesn't care. So he goes, he's like, what am I doing with my life? Why am I even here? So he sits down, and he doesn't care if he gets fired or not. He's just like, whatever, this is what it is. And the two Bobs, not only do they not fire him, they give him a raise. They promote him. He doesn't even want it. Like, he walks in and the two Bobs say something to the effect of, I see you've been missing a lot of work lately. And this guy's like, I wouldn't say I've been missing it, Bob. Now, that's not to say that you shouldn't, you know, that you shouldn't try to do a good job. But So I'm not saying just be a complete slacker. But I am saying that there is something liberating. There's something liberating about no longer afraid of failure. I think that's what I'm really trying to say. It's not that you don't care. Of course you're going to care. Anything that's important in life, you're going to care. It's that fear of failure. It's that fear of the bottom falling out, you know, out of the whole thing. So this is how I got the name Crazy Frank. I went into this interview with these people, and I thought the whole fucking thing was a joke. I thought it was ridiculous. I've probably told this story before on a Crazy Frank Live. I should write these things down, but this is it in a nutshell. I had applied to a blind box for a job here in Sioux Falls. It was like, looking for radio people in Sioux Falls, yada, yada, yada. Hey, I'm a radio guy, and I had hit the ceiling in Watertown, South Dakota. It was a dead-end job before I turned it down the first time. And the only reason why I took the job was because the job that I did take, I washed out of that within 2 months. They were like, it ain't going to work. You're going to have to hit the road. So I called the people in Watertown and said, hey, if that job's still open, I'll take it. And I had genuinely thought when I took that job, you know what? Here's what I'm going to do. Life gives you lemons, you make lemonade. And I genuinely, in that gig, decided that I was going to just do a fantastic job for them. And I did. I did a terrific job. I increased billing on that station multiple times over. I did a fantastic job for them there. And when, after a year review, I was like, hey, so let's talk about some more money here. And they're like, you're just an announcer. That's what they called me, an announcer. You're an announcer. We're not going to pay an announcer any more money. You're ridiculous. It was like, ha, 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 ha. Out of here, you peasant. So that's when I started looking for another gig. I thought, well, because, you know, if I'm being honest, I loved Watertown, South Dakota. I mean, there was no Costco. There was no Wendy's. But they had a Taco John's. And there was a Costco and a Wendy's about an hour and 45 minutes or so away. So it wasn't like you couldn't find one. But I could have lived in Watertown, South Dakota just fine. I had adapted. Because really, let's face it, most of the stuff that you want that you can't get locally, you can get it online. And they'll just mail it to your house. But that's what got me looking for the job. And I replied to this blind box ad, and they were like, you need to go to this website and watch this video. And I think the HR people thought this video was really going to hype people up for wanting the job. But as I'm watching the video, I should see if I could find the original video that they made me watch. It was so ridiculous. First of all, it was very poorly put together. Very, very amateur hour. And then it was all, it's going to be a pawn shop. It's going to be a gun range. It's going to be a foundry. It's going to be a tattoo parlor. It's going to be a music store. It's going to be a sandwich shop. It's going to be a gun range. It's going to have a gun store. It's going to have a racetrack, a radio station, a state-of-the-art concert venue. And I thought, this is just ridiculous. The sheer scale and scope of this whole thing had train wreck written all over it. So I didn't even fill out the application. I didn't even bother with it. But the truth of the matter was, I needed some more cash. I was actually at an interview at Walmart. I had interviewed at the Walmart in Watertown. And the interview process in Walmart was kind of interesting. You start out, you kind of work your way up the interview ladder in one sitting. They have you meet like a little smaller manager, and then another bigger manager, and then a bigger manager, and then you work your all the way up to the final boss. It's like you're playing one of these Mario games. You work your way up to the final boss, which is the store manager. And then if the store manager likes you, then you're in. So I made it all the way to the final boss. And the guys, and the reason I had applied at this Walmart is because one of the salespeople at Watertown Radio, she was working part-time at this Walmart in like the cell phone section. And she was making, I want to say, $17 an hour. And I thought, damn, I could get up in the morning and do my morning show. I was only really obligated to be at the station until like 2 o'clock. I thought I could work at the station till 2, and then I could go work 3 or 4 hours a day at Walmart at $17 an hour, put some extra jangle in my pocket. Why not? So the store manager guy, we laughing and having a grand old time, and he says, well, yeah, I'd like to bring you on our team. Now, it's not up for negotiation. Whatever the computer says, that's what we can pay you. So he walks over to this, we were in a break room. He walks over to this computer, he types some shit in, it pops up. He says, well, yeah, we can give you $14.75 an hour. And I immediately thought, well, this other chick is working in a cell phone department and she's making $17. So put me in the cell phone department. He says, well, I can only pay you what the computer says we can pay you, and it's $14 and change. And I said, you know, that's just probably not going to work for me. Because I knew the pawn shop down the road had offered me like $15.75 or something. I don't know. It was more than that. So as I'm walking out, I thanked him for his time, and as I'm walking out of that Walmart, my phone rings, and it's that dude from the HR guy from the Badlands. And he says, hey, we didn't get your application. You didn't fill it out. Did you go watch the video? I said, yeah, I watched the video, and it's ridiculous. The whole thing is ridiculous. I don't think I'm interested. He said, why are you not interested? I said, because it doesn't seem like, it seems like a bunch of dudes in their garage smoking doobies and dreaming. And you know what? I got real life problems up here. I'm not going to take a day trip and get my dick yanked for an afternoon. He said, dude, it's real. You need to come. You need to come look. So I thought, well, whatever. I'm going to go to Costco anyway. I'd go down to Costco every few months. Got to go to Costco. I'd pick up a Wendy's chili. Sure, I'll check it out. So I went down and I saw that it was real. But it all did seem pretty fucking ridiculous. And even in hindsight, the whole thing seemed completely ridiculous. I have no regrets. I have no regrets, Lee, because I was in a dead-end job anyway. In fact, everybody that took a job in the radio department at KBAD, they got no reason to bitch because they were in dead-end jobs anyway. Honestly. You know? So nobody had any reason to bitch. Ron Keel was in Vegas doing a lounge act thing. You know, now Renee, his wife, she was working for the state and making really good money. So my sympathies go out to Renee big time. She came on as like the assistant manager of the whole operation at presumably a decent pay scale. But, you know, so she did. She was making kick-ass money. But, yeah, you know, I don't know, Crash, what could he have been making? When I met Crash, he was driving around in a Chevy Blazer. The door didn't close. Fucking garbage bag window. You know, it was. And he was, you know, the program director at the B, living in an apartment, and he still lives in the same apartment. But my point being is, he wasn't making an extravagant salary working at the B, so he didn't. You know, he left a pretty cake job. But I assure you, he was compensated in that 2 years that he worked at KBAD. He was compensated far better than he was being compensated at the B. And the same thing with Ben, a.k.a. Cade. He, turned the job down a couple of times. And I'd asked him, I said, so what made you come over? Because he was program director at the Crow and was doing a morning show over there. And he says, you know, I turned a job down twice, and finally Chuck had offered me so much money that I would be not of sound mind if I didn't take it. It was such a stupid number. He never told me the number. But he said the number was so high, I would be insane not to take it. So, really, that's what happened. Now, what would have happened if those guys had stayed at the Crow and the Bee? They probably would have ended up getting bounced out of there anyway. Maybe not that year, but eventually they both would have got bounced out of there. Or pushed out because there was no more money and they couldn't afford to live. Had to go find another job. So it was during that interview that as I was talking to these guys, and it was my just unfiltered whatever, and it was Crash. It was like, dude, this guy's crazy. That's what we're going to call you, Crazy Frank, because you're fucking crazy, man. That's how I got the name. Now, I don't think I'm crazy, but I've read somewhere that crazy people don't think they're crazy. So I very well could be crazy. But that ties in to a message that I got. Somebody had said, hey, if you need content for tonight's live, waiting for it to load. Here we go. If you need content for tonight's live, we love hearing the memoirs of your life's experiences. But is there one thing you would change if you could go back in time? He says, personally, there were many missed opportunities for me to bang the hell out of a hot chick since we were mid-teens. Let's call her Missy. Now I wish I had. No matter the outcome, my life would have been completely different. She's still hot, and I'd still bang her, though I never will. Now there's 30 years of baggage on both sides. The past will never change, no matter how much it changed us. So, I've thought about that. Knowing what I know now, could I go back? Every now and then I'll find myself saying that. Man, I wish somebody had gone back and told me this. Or I wish somebody had gone back and told me that. Or I wish I could teleport back to man, I wish somebody would have tipped me off to buy a bunch of Bitcoin. You know? Bitcoin was selling for, you know, fractions of a dollar a piece. You know, maybe fractions of a penny at one point. And now, even at its lowest, I think it's at $17,000. Let's look and see. I got that Coinbase thing. You know, and there are, you know, as I've traveled down life's road. Yeah, Bitcoin is $17,399.19. $17,399.19 for one Bitcoin. And they used to sell for fractions of a penny. Can you imagine that if you just, oh yeah, I can get 10 of them for a penny? Give me $20 worth. And now they're worth $17,000 apiece. $20 worth. When you could get 10 for a penny. Can you imagine? You'd be fucking loaded. So, I mean, there's those kinds of things. Then there are, you know, opportunities that I didn't take. Seems like as you travel life's path, you run into forks all the time. Do you go left? Do you go right? Sometimes you don't have any great information or intel on either path. You just kind of pick one and go and hope for the best. What I'll say is that every little step or perceived misstep led me to where I am right at this spot. And I will say that there were things that I could have done where I might have turned out better for me financially. some may have made things worse. I don't know. I don't know that there's anything I would really change. Because I'm afraid that if I changed anything, that I wouldn't be where I am right now. Which is in a rundown house in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, in the basement, in my basically pajamas, talking to an audience of, I haven't even looked, probably a few hundred people on a Thursday night. But life isn't bad. You know, life is just... Yeah, I could make more money. We all could make more money. And I guess the question is, how much money is enough? Why does Elon Musk still go to work every day? You know, I think about that. These guys have billions and billions of dollars. Billions of dollars. And they're always trying to... This is my pledge to the universe. I will never have $1 billion in the bank. Like, even if I earned billions of dollars a year, I would not have billions. Because what in the fuck does a person need $1 billion in the bank for? I ask you. I just don't get it. Maybe it's the socialist in me. Maybe I am somewhere dyed-in-the-wool socialist. But what does a person need $1 billion sitting in the bank for? Ah, goddamn. I mean, a person needs enough money, I would think, to pay their bills. I've never done this in my life, but it would be nice to have a little savings. So if shit does go south, cars and, something happens, there's a little emergency fund, a rainy day fund, if you will. I don't have a rainy day fund. I got some credit, high interest credit cards that the rainy day stuff goes on the high interest credit cards. You know, just going to get your oil changed when you should. Having the money to do that would be nice. I mean, I would like to have a cool house that I wouldn't be embarrassed to invite people over and hang out. That'd be cool. You know, one of the main reasons why I don't want people showing up at my house is I'm a little embarrassed that my house is kind of a hole. That's all. I'm not set up to entertain guests. It's a rundown-ass, junky house. And I have no real interest in fixing it up because I'm afraid if I did fix it up, the landlord would just raise the rent. So there's that. Which is kind of why I don't want people showing up at my house. I'm not exactly proud of the fact that I live in a rundown shack. I like to stay off the radar. That and my home is kind of my fortress of solitude, like Superman had. You know, this is my little safe spot, my little cocoon. This is my, you know, I don't want a bunch of people. It's not a fucking museum or a public, you know, gathering place. But, you know, if I had a bunch of money, I would buy a fancy place and I would have I'd have like the main house where people aren't allowed to go. And then I'd have like the clubhouse down by the street. Everybody can come out, show up, hang out in the garage and, you know, shoot the shit. I'd love that. But I don't know that I'd ever have $1 billion in the bank. I don't know that I even want $1 million in the bank because I feel like there's probably other people that could use that. Like Scrooge McDuck, what good's it doing sitting in a bank somewhere collecting interest? You can't take it with you. Why not do cool stuff with it now? So, I mean, I could... The idea of having financial independence certainly appeals to me. Having enough money that you don't have to worry about money. How much is that? Gee, dude. If I could make $100K a year, I'd be... There's nothing that I have ever desired that I couldn't get. That I could not acquire if I made $100K a year. That's it. I could, you know what I mean? It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. These people have billions of dollars. I can't even fathom it. Why they would want that? Harriet here. I worry what will happen in the future when your daughter gets like high school age. Well, why does Harriet care what happens with my daughter? why is Harriet so concerned? You'll have to elaborate on that. I worry about what will happen in the future when your daughter gets like high school age. I truly do, just saying. I don't know what that means. You'll have to elaborate. p.m. this person says, you're doing a great job and a lot of us like you. Well, thank you. That's kind of you to say. Good evening, brother. Sorry I haven't been able to tune in lately, but I'm listening tonight. Just want to say thanks. I received my K-back stickers. Hope you and the Gooch are staying warm. Take care, buddy. This must be Ron, and this is the Hillbilly 007. Now, this is something, and I don't know if this is what Harriet's talking about or not, but this is something that is in my brain. When I don't plan on living in this place forever, where I'm living right now, because what's going to happen with Ava is when she gets to be, you know, wanting to have sleepovers and her friends are, I think that's probably even earlier than high school. That's probably, you know, third, fourth grade kind of stuff. You live over there? Fuck, you're going to run into that just about wherever you live. But I would, you know, that's my 5-year plan anyway. My 5-year plan is to not live in the place that I'm living currently. To find something. And how we're going to make that, I guess I don't know. I'm hoping one of these days we're going to turn a serious corner and make a little extra cash in this whole K-back endeavor. Maybe we'll get some real advertisers on. Maybe something will break. Keeping hope alive. But if it doesn't, well, then I might have to do something different. That's all, because I have my daughter right now it doesn't make a damn bit of difference. And the school district she's in, I don't know that anybody that goes to that school could be snobby about where we live compared to the rest of the houses in the neighborhood at present. But, you know, as we move forward, you know, that is something that's always in the back of my head. I got some stuff I want to pay down. And, you know, I don't know. The real challenge for me now is that houses in Sioux Falls are ridiculously expensive. I mean, if I wanted to buy the house that I'm living in right now, something of this same scale, it still costs $100,000. $100,000. The house next door to me sold for like $170,000. And the one up the street sold for $250,000. That's a lot of bread. So it's really kind of cost prohibitive. I don't know. I was thinking about this the other day. Did we just fold it up and go live in a nice apartment somewhere? Miss Whip, was chatting with her, and she's like an apartment manager at a place, and she was going on about how this apartment she's living in is 3-bedroom, 2-bath, looks really big and spacious. And I'm like, well, what's something like that cost a month? And it was, I want to say she said it was $1,200 a month, which is almost 3 times what I'm paying for rent right now. But it's a 3-bedroom apartment with a nice big living room, and you don't have to worry about people saying, oh, I'm still not going to want people coming over to my house. But with 3 bedrooms, I don't know, could find a place to set up. K-back doesn't take up a lot of space. K-back doesn't take up a lot of space. Really, the big pluses for where we are right now is that I got a whole basement to put all my projects and my nonsense in, and I can park the RV here. So there's that. But it might be in the next 5 years if things don't break or whatever the hell. You know what? Here's the thing. At any time, my landlord could decide that he just wants to go ahead and sell. We're constantly getting these things dropped in the mailbox that say, we'll pay cash, because you have all these house flippers out there, you see? They just buy up the houses, they dress them up, put lipstick on the pig, and then they flip them. Most of the property, I would say, that gets bought and sold in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, is purchased by these house flippers. They're buying them. Like the house next door to me sold for $70,000. And then they turned around, remodeled the inside of it, reshingled the roof, and sold it for $170,000. So they turned it with a $100,000 profit. It didn't cost them $100,000 to reshingle the roof and remodel the kitchen. I guarantee you. And it was like, duh. And they flipped it, and you know, they put it on the market, and it sold within 2 weeks. So that's kind of the thing with property values in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. So does it mean start looking at another? I move out of Sioux Falls. Do I really have to be in Sioux Falls to do this show? Harriet's listening. He don't care if I'm in Sioux Falls or not. Know what I mean? I mean, I say we're a Sioux Falls radio station. We've got, you know, Wally at My Mechanic and the Red Rock and all those other, you know, advertisers. But do I have to be in Sioux Falls, South Dakota for that to happen? These are all things that have popped into my head. And it is directly proportionate to, you know, Ava's social thing, you know. And it's not because of how she's dressed. She's got the best of everything. Ava really does get the best of everything. She doesn't have some janky Android, you know. She's got the iPad. She's, you know, the clothes, or, you know, she's got all the Paw Patrol stuff. You know, running around town, nobody's looking at her thinking, boy, she's a, you know, poor kid. But walking up to the front, she gets dropped off by the school bus, they definitely would. I was offered a 3-bedroom homestead down by Viborg for $40,000 rent to own, $1,000 a month. Viborg. That is, it's a parent's responsibility to provide for their kids. It's hard and expensive now, won't be cheaper in 10 years. Oh, she's well provided for. There's no question about that. It's just the house is crappy. Harriet says, Harriet likes to talk about Harriet in the third person. I don't know if Harriet thinks that that bothers me. I'm amused by it. Really, most things about Harriet amuse me. Harriet hopes you can either make KBAC financially stable or that you can find another paying position that still allows KBAC in the future. I don't hope you fail. I want you to thrive. It's just hard to do seat of your pants, of course. That's, you know, if you don't try something, you'll never know. And if you don't try to do stuff, it never, nothing ever happens. That's what I've learned. It used to be these homestead kind of things and land contract deals were all over the place. 3-bedroom homestead down by Viborg for $40,000. Rent to own, $1,000 a month. I don't even know where the hell Viborg is. But those things used to be all over the place. And I guess I always took for granted that they always would be. But now, as white hot as the housing market, I guess what I'm gambling on is the housing market will finally fucking collapse. That it's a bubble and it's going to pop. That's what I keep hoping for. That the housing thing is a bubble. It'll eventually pop. Bring on the recession already. Yeah, because the pricing for housing is just ridiculously stupid. My son is 28 and off the radar. Haven't had contact with him in 5 years. That's his choice regarding his life's mistakes. I miss him dearly. My daughter is 13. I haven't seen her in a decade. Not blaming Coco, I blame my choices. Children are amazing and... Well, what's Coco got to do with anything? You know what? I don't want to know. Children are amazing and priceless. Best investment ever. This person says, brother, I understand your concern, but you're a good dude. Genuine. Ava's friends are going to want to sleep over because they will be her friends. When I grew up, we lived in a shithole in Gary, Indiana. We didn't have two nickels to rub together, but we had great friends. Those were some of the best times of my life. You know, that reminds me of when I was very young. We lived in my grandmother's house in Elfers, Florida. That was the name of the town, Elfers, Florida. My grandmother's house was legit. You see these shows about like Johnny Cash, where he grew up in this like sharecropper kind of a shack, tin roof shack. That is what my grandmother's house looked like. Legit tin roof. When it rained, you could hear it on the roof. Just, in fact, that is one of the most soothing sounds to me. That loud, almost deafening sound of heavy tropical rain falling on a tin roof is like a lullaby to me. It's a country song. We didn't know he was poor, po folk. We didn't know we were poor. My dad had split. It was me and my mom and my grandmother. And it was a... That house I grew up in when I was a kid makes the house I'm living in right now look like the fucking Taj Mahal. In fact, the house was so run down that eventually the state of Florida had it condemned. Couldn't even live there anymore. They came in and had the house condemned. Roaches everywhere. You'd wake up in the middle of the night and you'd go to take a leak and you'd turn on the light and roaches would just go, they fly down there. It's bad. It's bad. I mean, looking back at it now, there's no way I would ever let Ava live in a place like that. But I didn't know any better because I was a little kid. And my friends that I had at school, like Scott Carter was one of my good friends, nobody cared either. They came over and played, and, you know, if they did think we lived in a shithole, they never really said anything. Nobody picked on me because I lived in a shithole. People picked on me because I was tall and skinny and had big ears. That's what I remember from Florida and kids picking on me. Nobody ever picked on me because they thought, because we were all probably poor. They were like, better not make fun of him for being poor. I remember when HBO was a big thing. People would brag about having HBO, like second grade. Hey, do you have HBO? Then it became a joke. HBO was horrible body odor. Anyway. So, but things, I don't know. I remember when my dad finally got custody of us, he took us to Downingtown, Pennsylvania. And where we lived in Downingtown, Pennsylvania was essentially the all-black chunk of town. If Downingtown, Pennsylvania could have a ghetto, that's where we lived, in the biggest place in the ghetto. And we were the only white family within several blocks. It was all black folks and Italians, and mostly black folk. And it was the first time I'd ever seen a black person in real life. And this forever will be my impression of people of darker color. Fucking great. Those folks welcomed us like they had known us their entire life. And that will forever be my impression of black folks, because that was my first impression. It was super positive. I was sad to leave there. They have that, Rod the Wad Stewart has that song, Bring Over Some of Your Old Motown Records. We'll put the speakers in the window and we'll go on the roof and listen to the miracles. Well, before I'd ever even heard that song, that's what they did in the building across from the house that we lived in, which was basically a large apartment. It was like the manager's apartment of an apartment building. It was a whole back half of an apartment building was our place. And the people that lived across from us, that's what they would do. They would put their speakers in the windows of their apartment, you know, sticking out the window, and they would dance in the streets. They taught me this dance they called the Smurf. And they're all laughing because I was doing it out there with them, you know, the electric boogaloo, whatever. I was 6, 7 years old. And maybe they were laughing at me. I don't know. But they all treated me, they just treated me with absolute respect. Respect, and I wasn't looked down on. I remember hearing Eddie Van Halen telling the same story. Because Eddie Van Halen, a lot of people don't know this. I think it's his dad was, wasn't Swedish, but Danish, something like that. I think his dad was Danish. And his mother, Eddie Van Halen's mother, I want to say, was Filipino. And when they came to the United States, they didn't speak any English. So he was this Filipino weird-looking dude and didn't speak any English. And his experience when he got to California with his family was very similar to my experience when I moved to Downingtown, Pennsylvania. And that was the black kids were all super cool to him. They all, you know, they were all cool. It was the white kids that would pick on you and tease you and call you names and be ruthless. I don't remember them ever picking on me because I had big... It was probably the only time until I got to high school that people weren't calling me Dumbo and, you know, picking on me for being tall and skinny and having big ears. So, and I'm almost 50 years old. And really the only time I can remember just being genuinely accepted by everybody around me was in Downingtown, Pennsylvania, when my family were the only white people anywhere near them. And I mean that's here's the thing, because growing up in Florida when I did, and where I did, it was very white, very redneck, very racist. No question, my grandmother was a ridiculous racist. Now, she wasn't like a member of the Ku Klux Klan or anything, but you'd wonder sometimes with some of the things that she would say. But she was a religious woman. She read the Bible and the whole bit. I don't know how you reconcile that level of just horrible racism and then the Bible and the same thing. It still, to this day, as a nearly 50-year-old man, it's difficult for me to reconcile those two things. My grandmother, to me, was such an amazing, warm, loving woman. I was the baby of her youngest child. I was the baby of the baby, and was without a doubt her favorite. And she was kind to animals. She whooped my ass for harassing alligators. We drug an alligator out of the sinkhole. Me and Scott Carter and another one of our friends drug an alligator out of the sinkhole. Put it on a wagon, drug it into the front yard. And we were going to charge snowbirds or tourists, you know, 50 cents or something to come look at our alligator. And my grandmother saw that we were doing this, took a switch off the tree and whooped all of our asses and told us to take the alligator back where we found it and quit harassing the wildlife. So she had this immense respect for an alligator in a sinkhole. But for people of color, she had zero respect. And I used to think to myself, boy, I had to, folks, because my only, at that point, until we moved from Florida to Pennsylvania, I wasn't even really sure black people were real. You never saw. I loved the Jeffersons. I loved Sanford and Son, all these TV shows. But that's the only time I ever saw people of color on TV. Sesame Street, another example. These people seem fine to me. Why would you think of them so negatively? I remember telling my mother as I was getting on the plane, I didn't know the difference between Pennsylvania and Transylvania at the ripe old age of 7. No. It's Transylvania is a whole other continent. Pennsylvania, no vampires. It's going to be fine. We land in Philadelphia, and there's snow on the ground. I'd never seen snow on the ground. Like, there's ice outside. The puddles were freezing over. My mind was blown. I'd never seen anything like that. And they were black folk, as you might imagine, in Philadelphia in the early 80s. Very dark. And I didn't know what to expect. Because, again, my grandmother, super racist. My uncle Smokey, her son, super racist. And he went to seminary school. He was going to be a preacher. Super racist. I didn't know what to expect. And what I discovered were folks that treated me like they'd known me their entire lives. And I should add that they're folks that had every reason to be apprehensive, every reason to be distrustful of folks of my shade, if you know what I'm saying, given the history. And here we just show up. Some hillbilly cracker from the deep south. And they just treated me so well and so loving and so kind. But yeah, no, they didn't. Folks in the shit into town don't care. Folks in the shit into town ain't going to make fun of other people who live in the shit into town because they all live in the shit into town. It's the folks that live in the nice end of town that give the people in the shit end of town the trouble. And that is a concern for me with Ava. I don't have any concern for her health or her. She's, you know, has the best of medical care and insurance and all that good stuff. And she wants for nothing as far as possessions or clothing. Not that she's asked for a lot, except for toys. She really loves Paw Patrol stuff. But it's one of those things that I keep coming back to, how much money does a person really need? That's all. How much do you really need to have? Do you need billions of dollars in the bank? So when I think about things that I could do in my life that I could change. I suppose there are a lot of places where I could improve. Like I have told myself, I wished I had taken school more seriously. I didn't. I hated school. I hated school because it seemed like a colossal waste of time. I was several grades ahead of anything I was doing in class. I was bored out of my mind. It's kind of like if you were to find the world's greatest mathematician, right? Find the world's greatest mathematician and then tell him now he has to show up at a place 5 days a week, 8 hours out of the day, and do multiplication tables. It's the world's greatest mathematician. You're not going to ask him to sit here and that's kind of how I felt in school. I felt like everything that they were doing was so beneath me. And it was just fucking boring. And it was repetitive. And it was like working in a factory someplace. Building the same widget day in and day out. Like, look, if I can exhibit to you that I know how to do this mathematical, I know the functions here. Why do I have to do it 300 times? And then they would give you test, and they would tell me, well, you take this test. So I would take the test and prove it. I remember I would get these, they would give us these scholastic tests. that would place you in whatever grade you should be in. And I consistently, and I was fourth grade, consistently showing up in 17th grade, which suggested I was on my way to a master's degree somewhere. That's where I should be. But I'm in fourth grade. And then they make me take the test again because they thought I cheated or they thought that there was something, an anomaly of some sort. The one scholastic test a year, one year I took four separate times I took the same damn test because they couldn't believe that I was scoring as high as I was. Yet not doing anything. I hated school, but I wish I had taken it seriously. Because had I would have ended up on a completely different trajectory, and then I wouldn't be here. And that's why every time I start to think, boy, I wished I'd have done this, or I wished I'd have done that, or I wished I'd have banged this chick, or had not have banged this other chick. Every time I think I might go back and, you know, and wonder, then I look at Ava. And I think I wouldn't have Ava. I wouldn't be where I am right now. And maybe it's my mental illness, whatever it is, but where I'm at right now feels like it's the exact right place to be. I've lived many times in my life where wherever I was or whatever I was doing did not feel like the right thing. Like the universe or my internal something, intuition, whatever it was pushing me away or pushing me out of certain things and certain situations. But I've never felt more like I'm doing the right thing than now. Well, in the last, or I wouldn't be doing it. That's just it in a nutshell. If I didn't feel like this was the place I was supposed to be doing what I am supposed to be doing, that's when people start getting that traveling bone, that little thing inside you that tells you to just start moving. And I've not had that. This is the longest I've ever had a job, the same job. And it's not even a real job. This is the longest I've ever lived in one place in my life, including when I was a kid. In this house in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, is the longest I've ever lived in one place. Ever in my life. Because I've always been moving around, always jumping from this to that, to this to that, going to the next thing. Because there always felt like there was something like a fire under my ass telling me, well, now you got to go here. Nope, now you got to just. And I don't know if it's because this is where I'm supposed to be or if it's because I'm just getting old and that's what happens when you get old. But here I am. Here you are. Here we all are doing this thing. And what does it mean? Maybe it means nothing. I guess I don't have the answers to that, but. It is, as they say, what it is. So, yeah. We just keep trugging along, man, and hitting it and hoping something breaks. We're monthly, I think right now, only about $300 in the hole with KBank. I have to make up that $300 other places. So I've got some crap I'm selling on eBay, and we'll get over this month, and you know, well, I got a lot of crap to sell on eBay. So we'll just keep trudging, you know, and once we get to bike night, once bike night starts back up again, whew, we're gonna be smooth sailing for 4 months through the summer. So we just keep trudging along until bike night, and I don't know, between the karaoke's and I wasn't able to do the last karaoke out at the Red Rock. But I'll be doing the Sky Lounge and Tea this coming Saturday in a couple of days. They're having an ugly sweater contest out there. If you're in the area, you'd like to come out and hang out at the Sky Lounge and Tea for Crazy Frank Karaoke, would love to see you. And we're still in the midst of working out the details on the Crazy Frank's Clubhouse, a.k.a. the Guilty Pleasures, a.k.a. Forbidden Fruit Hour. I guess I haven't checked with Bootalicious if he was still on board for that. But he had mentioned that, and it's kind of evolved. It's going to have to be a live show. We'll have to do it live for an hour. And we're going to have some extra iTunes fundage available, because I know there's going to be a lot of music we're buying for that. Because it'll be anything goes. It'll basically be an anything goes hour of K-Bag. And somebody had said, oh, you should call it Crazy Frank's Clubhouse. And I kind of like the idea of that. But it'll be brought to you by maybe New Era Steel was the idea. We had our good friend Jeff at Pit of Fashion Brewery had sponsored the Pit of Fashion Blues Hour on Sundays. So that helped for a couple of months there. That was an extra couple hundred bucks in our pocket that we helped get the whole thing moving. Now, he's not going to sponsor that into January. I think he did that just as kind of a seed. He likes the blues, and he wanted to help out K-Bac, and I appreciate that and his friendship. And we're going to keep calling it the Pit of Fashion Blues Hour. Whether he's sponsoring it or not, we're going to keep doing it and keep calling it the Pit of Fashion Blues Hour, because it feels good. It feels like the right thing to do. And then we'll... somebody says, are you still going to be on iHeartRadio? I like listening through my Roku. Yeah, that is the way we're planning on going. I crunched the numbers to see if us paying our licensing directly to the performing rights organizations would be more cost effective. I had thought initially that it would be more cost effective to do it that way. And I don't know that the iHeart thing is really bringing a lot to the table. Like, no advertisers have flocked to me saying, oh, my God, you're on iHeart? Well, holy shit, take my money. That's not happened. that's not happened at all. But when you look at the amount of work that's involved and the amount of changes we'll have to make, for the what we would be saving for our monthlies, I think we're way better off with a Live 365 plan. Not because iHeart's included. I could take or leave the iHeart thing, really. In fact, I just got a thing in the Live 365 newsletter that said that now the Live 365 app is available on Roku. So anybody now that's on Live 365 will also be available on Roku, the Roku TV, whatever that thing is. I had one of them like 7 or 8 years ago. I didn't even know they were still a thing, the Roku. But I got an email from them. So then the other thing is we have doubled down. I'll mention this, and it's a little bit of K-Back business, but I'm here. We'll go a little later since we're talking about it. When we first went on to the iHeart thing, we had one of our first credits was almost a full month. Like, we, for running the Live 365 ads, we got a credit of like $800 and some odd. It basically gave us a free month. And it was needed. I mean, boy, we were really, I was like, I might have fucked up big here. Because we started in January. I was thinking, oh, we're going to get Kim to sell advertising for us, and we're going to be golden. And then that wasn't happening. And then I had these $1,000 a month bills. And I'm like, fuck. Now, we did have, I don't want to out the guy, but we had a listener give us $1,000 to help the bills. And between that and then getting an $800 and some odd credit from the Live 365 people for running those ads, we got some breathing room until we got to bike night. Once we got to the bike night season, then we were smooth sailing for those 4 months. And I got a little cocky. I got a little cocky, and people were bitching about those sponsored ads, those Live 365 ads. So I pulled those Live 365 ads way back. And as a result, we weren't getting nearly the impressions, and we weren't getting nearly the credit. And when we got to the end of the summer and we no longer had the bike night money, boy, was I feeling it. And those credits were minuscule. $100 off a month, you know, that sort of thing. So September, I added all the Live 365 ads back in. So I'm thinking, and they do this 3 months back. So the last credit we got was for August, and our credit was like $60. But we have like three or four times those impressions now for September. So I just asked them for a calculation. So the next credit we get will be for the month of September. And they'll tell us what that is at the end of December. And that'll apply to the January bill. So I'm hoping now, because the beginning of September is when I cranked those Live 365 ads way up again. I'm hoping that as we start this 2023, that our credits will start being larger. So that'll help offset the fact that we're $300 light a month. And, you know, then, like I said, once we get into the bike night season, then we're smiling motherfuckers for like 4 months or so. And who knows? You keep hoping something's going to break. You keep hoping some more advertisers will hop on. Some new revenue streams will come in. I did get not long ago a thing where I'm able to monetize the KBAC Facebook page. So make sure you like and share stuff you see on the KBAC Facebook page. We're not going to get rich off of it, but if we can get a couple of $100 a month off of that, you see what I mean? If we can get a couple $100 of revenue off of the KBAC Facebook page for people liking and sharing basically the stupid memes that I post, we're going to be golden. Well, maybe not golden, but silver? Bronze? Perhaps? Who knows? Who knows? What I do know is it sounds like Ava's getting kind of restless upstairs, and it is time to wrap her up, baby. Wrap her up. So thank you for joining me on the program this evening, Crazy Frank Live. I'm going to save this, and we'll upload it to the website. It'll be available at kbacradio.com. Click on the Crazy Frank Live link, and what does this say? You make Harriet and a lot of others happy. You get a lot of affirmation, so you know people appreciate you. That's pretty sweet, because you don't get accolades like that in almost every other job. Trust Harriet on this. Well, I know. Somebody says, speaking of the Facebook page, why can't we make posts to it? Why can't random people make posts to the... Well, I'll tell you why random people can't make posts to the KBAC page. Because if they did, people would make random posts to the KBAC page. And we wouldn't maybe not necessarily want those posts. That's why. Because not everybody's trustworthy. You can't just say only certain people can make posts to it. You either have to say people can or they can't. So then, I don't know, you'll end up with everybody who wants to plug their shit plugging it on the KBAC Facebook page. So now you'll have good-meaning people like, you know, hey, Mr. Munch might post, hey, I love this station. Or, you know, Toes will post a little smiley face meme anime avatar thing, you know, normal stuff. And then you'll get somebody like He Who Will Not Be Named posting links to his streaming rock station. You know, you'll get that. And somebody posting links to their Herbalife pyramid scheme thing. And people saying, oh, this guy's a son of a bitch. Like the Oatmeal Slayer went off on me one day. I was coming out of a... And here's the irony. I didn't even pay for it. I had to go meet Mitch and Feldman at the Red Rock. And I had to have somebody watch Ava for me because I didn't want to take Ava with me to this Red Rock meeting. And that person gave me a gift card to the Caribou place and said, on the way back, could you get me a Caribou coffee and get yourself something too? So I didn't even pay for it. And I posted a photo of me holding a Caribou hot chocolate. And the Oatmeal Slayer went completely uncorked on me. Yeah, it must be nice. I can't afford that stuff. And you're always talking about how broke you are. And here you are buying a Caribou hot chocolate. And I'm like, yeah, dude, I'm in my 20-year-old Jeep that's got a quarter of a tank of gas in it. And I'm getting a Caribou hot chocolate. I'm really balling. I am, yeah. Oh, I just was so irritated. But you'll get shit like that then slapped all over the KBAC page. And I don't need that. And I should also mention, there's kind of an algorithm for Facebook that you try to play to maximize your likes and all that stuff. And if you just start bombarding it with crap, I shouldn't say crap, but just random stuff, you start bombarding the page, it fucks with the metrics. Like, I've already fucked my own metrics up. I probably have to have one of my shill accounts post something to reset the algorithm. It's kind of a whole, like, black magic thing. But mostly, I don't let randos just post to the KBAC page, because if randos could post to the KBAC page, you'd get people plugging all kinds of crazy shit. Hey, try the hot dogs at Phil's Hot Dogs. And these bands, you should check out my band. You know, and it's some like Tibetan heavy metal back mask something. Right now, Chopper Dave and Bootalicious are like, ooh, that sounds like good music. You have my permission to call me out for my contributions, good or bad. I'm not sure if this is the guy that gave us $1,000 or not, but it was a lot of money. $1,000. Somebody just like, hey, here's $1,000. Keep it going. And, this is actually Mr. Munch. Not safe for radio, or maybe it is. Your call. I just Venmo'd you $100 to help you with living expenses. Love you, brother, and KBAC will survive. I appreciate that, man. I really do. I've said this before, and I'll say it again, and I know I've said that all the time. It's the audience that keeps this here. It's not the advertisers. It's the audience that keeps KBAC going, that keeps this whole thing going. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's the coolest gig that there is. Because this is it's a family. It's what we do. It's. To have an audience that believes enough in what we're doing to financially contribute to it regularly, that's something. That's something. Any other radio station in town, the DJ comes on and says, hey, man, if we don't raise a couple $100, we're just going to shut it off. Those people would be like, oh, well, shut it off. and that's all there is to that. You know, then the story's over. But this, and it's one of the biggest reasons why I continued this whole thing from KBAD, because I recognized the audience was unlike any other audience that I've ever experienced in radio. And we had genuinely made a connection with the listener. Because not only had we genuinely made a connection with the listener, and a lot of people, you know, would say, oh, well, the reason why the ratings are as good as they are is because Chuck's given away, during the ratings book, he's given away $94.50 an hour. And you know what? That's valid. Chuck was giving away $94.50 an hour during the book, the ratings book. And the ratings book is based on a quarter hour share, which is how many people you might have listening in any given quarter hour. And how do you build quarter hour share? You give people a reason to keep listening. And Chuck, in the middle of the book, gave them that reason. At any time, I could say your name, and you could get on the KBAC workforce payroll and make $94.50 an hour, maybe all day long. Terrific reason to increase your time spent listening. Terrific way to increase your, not your cum necessarily, your cumulative audience, but your average quarter hour share. And that's why KBAC was consistently the number one rock station in the market, based on average quarter hour share. But we were always, KBAC or KBAD was always number three in cumulative audience. The B, like nearly double our cumulative audience, and the Crow, a safe margin ahead of us. So they had the cum, we had the average quarter hour share. So people thought, well, the only reason why anybody's listening to that is because the dude's giving away $94.50. If you weren't giving away $94.50, then you would have shit for listeners. And if you put it on streaming, you're really going to have nobody listening. And if there's one thing that I really relish in life, it is proving people wrong. And I'm proud to say that our cumulative audience now is now bigger than the Crow or the Bee. We're over 80,000 people. 88,000 is our cumulative audience. And it's actually going to be higher than that, because that's not individual. That's 88,000 individual connections. And that one connection could be one person listening with earbuds, or it could be a whole shop listening. So the reach is far greater than that. And it shows with our advertisers see that. And, well, anyway, I could talk. When it comes to KBAC stuff, I could probably talk all night long, but I will wrap it up. I'm going to record this, I am recording it. I'm going to save it. I'm going to upload it to the website, and you can check it out later at KBACradio.com, along with all the other installments of Crazy Frank Live, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Somebody wants to hear Wasted Rock Ranger. We'll drop that in the stack. And, yeah. I'll be back tomorrow bright and early at 9 and do it all again. Until then, kids, peace.
You put 62 gallons in it now, 64, whatever I just wrote down. Just add the 21 to it.